And so, like, this is like a part of God marrying another part of God. So it's imagine you're like inner butch and inner femme just getting like real into each other and just like pledging their love for each other.
We're treating the world to come, spiraling in time, dreaming alive.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nomi.
And this
is Dreaming
the World to come. This is Dreaming the World to Come, a project where we reimagine time and the ways we relate to it, aligned with ancestral Jewish traditions and honoring the diverse voices and experiences of the diaspora, past, present, and future, and the magnificent humans who have been dreaming of a just world for millennia.
Rebecca and I are both queer, non-binary, white, disabled Jews and Hebrew priestesses or priestixes. We live in the Pacific Northwest on Squaxin land, also known as the Stachos Village, known colonially as Olympia, Washington.
In addition to this podcast, we created a planner that combines Hebrew, Gregorian, and moon calendars. This year's is called Indwelling Dreams of Olam Haba. This podcast usually comes out the beginning of each Hebrew month and will include our takes on the month and an interview with a contributor who wrote about that month in the planner.
You don't need the planner to enjoy the podcast, but you can buy it at dreamingtheworldtocome.com on sale for $18 while supplies last.
And you can also join our Patreon to support this podcast for as little as $1 a month, patreon.com/dreamingtheworldtocome. And please review and rate our podcasts. We love to hear your feedback. Welcome to the Hebrew month of Sivan, this time that usually falls in the Gregorian year in June and the beginning of summer and Gemini season. Nomi, what are your associations with the Hebrew month of Sivan?
Well, kind of the main big happening in the Hebrew calendar is Shavuot, which is one of the major festivals in the Hebrew calendar. It is the commemoration of the day that Israelites received the Torah at Mount Sinai, and also marks the beginning of the wheat harvest, and it's the end of the Omer period. So for folks who, like myself, are really into counting the Omer, we've been counting for 49 days, and we get to, oh, I should have checked. I think it's the sixth day of
it
Sivan.
Is. Yeah, okay. I checked.
Thank you. Yeah. So the sixth day of Sivan is Shavuot. And so we've been like going through week by week, moving through the Tree of Life, all these different, very specific energies that we've been kind of tracking and counting in order to kind of like know ourselves in the world in a more rich and nuanced way, in order to prepare ourselves for receiving revelation. And what does it mean to receive revelation? I think that it, for me, it comes down to being like, there is so much in the world that I don't know. And there's certain things that I can know. And what are the things that are right on that precipice that I can like open myself a little bigger, be a little bit stronger, also have like the support of my community to hold bigger information coming in. And for me, often it has to do with, you know, things like climate justice and decolonization and just like really big things that we're dealing with as a world, and how to, just as, you know, when the Israelites were receiving Torah, there was a lot of fear and awe in it. And there's, you know, stories of like the mountain trembling, or like Dori Midnight talks in the first year of the planner, Dori wrote about God taking the mountain and turning it upside down over people and, like, you know, just like really huge frightening things happening that inspire awe. Mm-hmm. And so, like, tapping into that kind of energy, like, what is it that inspires this sense of both overwhelm, but also how important it is that we're here and able to, like, receive this information, and then what are we going to do with it?
And back to, like, more the agricultural roots of Shavuot, the mm-hmm. preparation to receive revelation was around watching the barley ripen.
Mm-hmm. The wheat, right?
Oh, I thought it was the barley ripening and then the wheat begins to ripen at Shavuot.
Okay. My understanding is that the beginning of it is the barley harvest.
Okay.
And then Shavuot is the wheat harvest. So okay. I think we're watching the wheat ripen. We're harvesting the barley, watching the wheat ripen.
Okay. Okay. We obviously are not doing this. We're like, what's ripening first?
I have no access to wheat or barley growing.
Yeah. Me neither. But they did. And they were part of the spiritual development between Passover and Shavuot, like, directly had to do with the watching the plants grow. Mm-hmm. So just goes to show there's a lot of revelation in terms of reconnecting with mm-hmm. plant growing cycles. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so one of the cool things about Shavuot too is, like, it's a holiday that doesn't have a huge amount of specific ritual or liturgy associated with it. So it's kind of more open to just, like, how do you want to celebrate it? How do you want to observe it? And the main thing to do for Shavuot is stay up all night and study. That's the tradition. So I think it might have been the first time I ever really observed Shavuot was where you came and did this incredible, like, mystical channeling revelation performance, which I would love for you to describe. Do you want to describe that performance?
Yeah, I made this paper mache mountain that I fit inside of, and it was covered in eyeballs, and the top came off of it. So I'd start inside, and then I would come out of it, and the top would come off. And yeah,
topless and your eyes closed.
Yeah, and I had painted, like, googly eyes on my boobs.
So Rebecca, I love it. Oh my gosh.
And I came out of it with my eyes closed, and it was kind of a commentary on sexism and also our disconnection from the earth, and that mm-hmm. like bodies with boobs are objectified, and also the vulnerability of closing your eyes and how that exposes you and on another level. And it was about really connecting with the earth and listening to the messages of the earth and understanding that our bodies are the earth. And so that, yeah, that the message that we received at Sinai about this is the Torah came from the mountain. It came from mm-hmm. the essence, the energy of the earth. So, but our bodies are the earth. So what messages do we have?
What you just said about, like, our bodies are the earth, that reminds me. So Shavuot, one of the things about it that actually Never, who we interview, really focuses on is this marriage between different aspects of God. So, you know, I think what one of the things you were just looking at was saying that it was a marriage between God and people. But if people mm-hmm. are a part of Shekhinah, we are, our bodies are God. So it's this, like, marriage between these different aspects of God, and that you were, like, channeling through your God self as mm-hmm. like Shekhinah's body here. Yeah. Sinai is kind of like the moment of the peoplehood of the Israelites really congealing into, like, okay, this is a people in a different way than, like, oh, this is a lineage that was then enslaved and, you know, left slavery. It's like, okay, there's, like, something that happened in that receiving of Torah. There was a covenant. There was an invitation into relationship with God in a specific way. And, well, when you and I were first learning as adults to read Torah, like many years after our bat mitzvahs.
Yes.
The section that we were reading was about this experience of being at Sinai, mm-hmm. and the awe and fear. And I remember being really impacted by that. And it's like, you read that part not at Shavuot, it's like a totally different part of the year, but it was cool. Like, it was cool to read that. And there's, you know, like trumpets blasting and thundering. And I don't know where the story about the mountain being turned upside down, but
lightning.
Yeah. And I know that Sam Cates Goldman, who's a friend who we used to do a lot of ritual with, told a story that was like, I don't know if it was the blasts of the trumpet that caused the people. So there's, you know, supposedly every Jew that's ever existed or ever would exist is there at the mountain. And then there would be these blasts and everyone would get blown way far away from the mountain. And then they would get pulled back towards the mountain. And it, supposedly it was like miles at a time, you know, like they get blown back a mile and then come back a mile. But that movement is like the foundation of the davening movement. Mm-hmm. And so you and I were kind of like geeking out about that rocking motion.
And that rocking is like really good for your nervous system and mm-hmm. calming and which makes sense when you pray.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that we have associated with the month of Sivan is different trees and plants. And the plant that we've connected with this month is balsam poplar. And during the time of Solomon's rule, which is one of the kings of Israel at one point, the Queen of Sheba came to Israel, who was the queen of Egypt and Ethiopia. And she brought all these gifts with her. And one of the gifts she brought was balsam. And there's lots of interpretations of what tree that was. It could be mastic or myrrh or a kind of evergreen tree, but there is a balsam poplar that many people know, the poplar tree, and that grows in this area. So we've used that as kind of the
stand-in
yeah for balsam, because it has the same name and it's also very fragrant, which this you might have heard of balm of Gilead, which so the balm in the Torah is referencing, that's the balsam. Anyway, so balsam poplar is the poplar that grows around here is called cottonwood, and it's this incredible smelling beautiful tree that's from North America or Turtle Island. And we actually harvest the buds from fallen branches, not from the trees, in the very early spring. Actually, this year I harvested them in January, because such weird weather these days. Mm-hmm. And then you soak them in olive oil. You can soak them for many months. And Sivan is a time you could strain them and make your perfumed olive oil, make your balms with beeswax. And, you know, the Queen of Sheba has a lot of stories about her, and some of them are very influenced by patriarchy and are very sexist, but she also, we can interpret her stories to be really matriarchal and empowering. She sounds like a badass. And so connecting her with, I mean, she's like literally been demonized in Kabbalistic and Ashkenazi literature. So kind of bringing her into the story in a positive light, it also brings balsam into our story as a positive thing. Because there's also this Talmudic story that warns against girls wearing balsam in their shoes, which Kat Johnston found that story when we were researching years ago together.
Slutty ladies with the balsam in their shoes.
Seducing boys and bringing them to sin. But the revelation that we're celebrating with balsam poplar is that seduction is beautiful, mm-hmm. and a dance and fun. And
it's nice to smell good and share that with each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the elevation of these like feminine wiles, you know, of like adornment and fragrance and seduction, and like that being a big part of Sivan feels like special and new discovery for me. So
beautiful. We're re-remembering these stories of women and non-binary people and people of color outside of the confines of patriarchy.
And Ashken normativity. Well, there's one more thing I wanted us to touch on from the Shavuot conversation. Just the part about, so Shavuot being a marriage between God and people, or between aspects of God's self. I liked that you said that the Torah is the ketubah. So it's like the marriage contract between these aspects of God, and never really goes into detail about, I think this is sweet, like this kind of elevation of like feminine wiles, you know, like that the bride on Shavuot wears like all these accoutrements. So we'll go all into that in the conversation with Never, but, and then the whole thing about, you know, balsam in your shoes, or just also that the tarot card associated with Sivan is the Lovers. And so, kind of our archetypes and guides during this time are the Lovers and the Prophetess. And so I love this combination too of like, on one hand, like dealing with that sense of like overwhelm and awe and mystery and like opening into the unknown, receiving information that maybe we wouldn't always be available to receive or open to receive, and that coupled with the Lover and that sense of just like intimacy and connection and bringing those energies together, that's just really actually very resonant for stuff going on in my own life right now. So
I also wanted to share that, you know, we said that it was like the ketubah between God and people, but Ketubah is also like a very patriarchal covenant too. Mm. And that there is another like ketubah alternative. So maybe we'll insert that here too. The Berit Ahuvim, which is another, you know, kind of like vows or making promises to each other that's more egalitarian and more equalizing and not about ownership.
Oh, interesting. So. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
And our interview with Never this month, I had to leave early. So when you're listening to it, that was what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you no longer hear Rebecca, it's because they had to go.
Yes.
But Never is someone in our community here in Olympia on Squaxin Land, and has been in some plays that I've directed, and I've seen her in some amazing productions, and
Shrek,
she's also
musical.
She was Fiona. It was incredible. Yeah. And she's just a really interesting multimedia artist in a lot of ways. She's a good follow on Instagram, and I'm so excited we got to talk to her and include her in this project.
Yeah. Her piece is incredible.
And actually like inspired, I think, my favorite art of the planner this year. Like, yeah, it's a bride and then God is like this groom with a big spleen on his head.
And the bride has balsam poplar in her shoes.
It's actually growing out of her heels into the earth.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Oh, yeah. And look closely for shoe bells. So they're there.
and other things. You'll hear more in the interview.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Dreaming the light, dreaming the light, dreaming the world to come.
Hello, we are here today with Never Angeline North. Hi, Never.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here.
We're so
excited. We love your piece so much. We've been gushing over it.
I wish we had recorded us reading it for the first time, because we were cracking up. Like, we were just this is Never's piece from the planner. If you haven't read it, you should. And if you don't have the planner, it's worth getting the planner just for this piece. And of course all the other pieces, but it's good times. So I'm gonna start off and just read your bio to orient people a little bit to who you are. Never Angeline North, she, her, is an agender author, artist, and musician living in Olympia, Washington. Her creative book-length works include Sea Witch, Careful Mountain, and Sarah, or The Existence of Fire. Find her online at never.horse. Welcome.
Thanks. And there's actually an addition to that because I put out a book last fall called Rain Bear with 9 exclamation points. So it's Rain Bear. the number of exclamation points does have Kabbalistic significance.
Oh. Will you say more?
Sure. Yeah, I guess this is the place for it. So it comes from, I did a bunch of research on this whenever I was doing it. First of all, it's half of 18. And also, I believe it has to do with something around like motherhood and like the book is about a mother and a daughter, which is interesting. I never thought I would be writing a book about motherhood, but it's very much like me pulling apart my mommy issues with my own mother. And so the main character from the beginning of the book is a mother and has a baby towards the beginning of the book. So yeah.
Cool.
It's a bizarre read. I feel like saying the book is about motherhood makes it sound like something it's other than what it is, because it's a wild ride. It's a roller coaster.
Nice.
Well, I'm excited to get it. Yeah. And I love that I went through a long period of my life where I like carefully counted the number of like punctuation. Actually, I always do 9. If there's going to be a bunch of something, it's always 9 for me.
That's so great.
That resonates.
Well, we would love to hear a bit about your orientation to the piece that you wrote with the planner, or anything you want to share from that piece or about the month of Sivan.
Yeah, I chose Sivan because I was just have always loved Shavuot, and I just think the idea of like, let's eat a bunch of desserts and stay up all night studying and like teaching each other things is such a delightful like holiday to have. And so I wanted to write something about that, but I didn't really know what. And so I just started rabbit holing, like I like to do, and diving into different aspects of Jewish texts. And I just came up with this. I saw this list of Isaac Luria writing about kind of like why we study on Shavuot. And like he references this list that is in, I think it was Isaiah, of all of these accoutrements that are put on by the Shabbos bride. And I don't think he says the Shabbos bride, but it just says like a bride. And the particular list in the translation I came across was so delightful and so wild and fun. And I was like, I couldn't get over it, you know? And that's, I feel like what I'm always looking for when I'm researching is just to like, I don't know. I'm just looking for the part that makes me go, wait, what? And I found that, and then I just wanted to like write something that got that feeling of wait, what, like across to everyone else, and to just share the delight I was experiencing through that text. So yeah.
Never would you be able to read the list of things that the bride should wear.
Yeah. So this is from Isaiah, and he is in the middle of a fiery tirade about something completely unrelated, and then all of a sudden drops in with this description of a bride. And there are 24 ornamentations that this bride is wearing. Shoe bells, headscarves, moon-shaped ornaments, necklaces, bracelets, veils, bonnets, leg bands, hair ties, brooches, earrings, rings, nose rings, robes, shawls, kerchiefs, pouches, mirrors, linens, turbans, claps, belts, coiffure, and an ornamental belt. I don't know what coiffure is. I would have to look that up.
I don't know what claps are.
I don't know what claps are either, but I love it.
I love you saying the piece, and whatever claps are.
Yeah. And shoe bells. I love shoe bells.
We start off the list so strong with shoe bells. Like, yes. It's great.
Bring back shoe bells.
Also, I'm wearing my moon-shaped ornament and my nose ring today. So I've got two of the 24 at the moment.
Oh my gosh. I wonder if I have any of the 24. I want to see which ones I might have. We tried to put as many as possible on the bride that we drew in the planner. Oh, I was like, how many of these things can we
did you
on?
Look up claps?
I didn't. I'm kind of shocked right that I now. Didn't. I am wearing hair ties. That might be it.
Oh yeah, I'm wearing hair ties too in my braids. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not dressed up for the wedding quite yet.
Oh, today. I do have a ring on, and I'm not wearing earrings at the moment. Usually I am, but I'm not.
Me too, yeah.
I have earrings. Well, I got earrings covered.
Thanks. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Collectively, awesome. We are almost a bride. Well, I love that your piece focuses on, like, on one hand, there's this kind of absurdist angle that you're taking with just like the over the top maximalism of this bride, and bringing that into, there's just like such queerness in this, wedding of different aspects of ourselves and the ways that we like dress up in preparation for this sacred ritual of like connecting all the aspects of ourselves to each other. And I'm wondering if there's anything else about that that you would want to say in regards to Shavuot or your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because I've heard people describe the Kabbalistic sort of marriage of the like masculine and feminine as being like heteronormative, but it's also like we're looking at two aspects of the same being. And so like this is like a part of God marrying another part of God. So it's imagine you're like inner butch and inner femme just getting like real into each other and just like pledging their love for each other. And I think that's so beautiful. And there's so many ways that we can look at these texts from a perspective that is very now and very queer and very trans and find things that are like delightful and meaningful to us. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, 20 years ago, queerness looked a lot different. Gender stuff looked a lot different. And so like we're in a position now to like read things for ourselves now. And that's, I feel like, why wouldn't we, right? We're always like looking at the world around us and like seeing how we make sense in it, right? And so why wouldn't we do that with our sacred texts?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that will impact how you practice your observance of Shavuot?
Since I wrote that, yes. Like, I'm going to think about it all the time now whenever I think of Shavuot now, because I saw that list and it just, if nothing else, I'll tell people about it. You know, I'll be like, yeah, so I wear this nose ring every day, but today I'm wearing this nose ring for Shavuot, you know?
Yeah.
I like the idea of everyone collectively trying to cover all of the things. Whoever shows up for the text study, like, a collective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's going to have to go all out and wear veils and turbans.
And find out what claps are.
And find out what claps are and whatever coiffure is. And the rest of us are going to be like, I'm wearing a necklace.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to send this list to my Omer Oracle class because we're meeting on Shavuot, and I'll see if we can do that, if we can cover all 24 of the accoutrements.
That's great. Makes me very happy.
I'm wondering, Rebecca, I know you have to go soon. Is this a good transition time, or is there anything else you want to see?
I looked up clasps in regard to jewelry. All that's coming up is clasps.
Maybe it meant clasps. I wonder what the original Hebrew was.
It might also be another, like a cultural thing at the time.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And probably some of these things, like what we think of when we picture a bonnet, is probably has nothing to do with what they're calling a bonnet, you
I
know?
mean, it would be so fun to research what these were at the time, too. I went and one time I went in New York, I went to an exhibit about Jewish fashion, like through history. And it didn't, I don't remember there being that old of stuff, but it was really fascinating to see what people were in Jewish communities all over the world. Well, I think it is a good transition for me. I'm sorry to miss the rest. I hope you two have a great rest of your conversation, and I'll look forward to listening to it later.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, even though there was a time conflict. And Never and I will have a good rest of the convo.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good
Bye,
to see
Never.
you.
Bye,
Bye.
Nomi.
So, yeah, I would love to know about what your Jewish upbringing was like, or what was your experience growing up in relation to Jewishness.
Yeah, so I'm a convert. My family, my biological family is not Jewish. So I actually grew up in a very conservative Christian household in southern Indiana. And it was very different and a very different approach to religion. And I was deep in. Like, I was fully in it. Like, I think my sisters sort of like, they went to church or whatever, but I don't think they like took it to heart or like dove in deep like I did. And I think that's because, I was a curious kid. And if you told me, especially somebody I respected, like I did my parents, like they told me, like, this is very important. This is like has a lot of meaning to us. And so I was like, oh, well, I'm gonna dive in. And so I was reading theology as like a 14-year-old. And I also was diving in because I was frustrated with it. And I felt like it wasn't, I felt like there was something I was missing because it didn't make sense to me. And the older I got, the less it made sense to me. And it didn't fit with my idea of like how the universe worked and how my experience of life was not squaring with the what I was being taught in a religious context. And so when I left that, I kind of did a lot of exploring, and I was taking a lot of classes. I took a class called Music and Religious Thought and Experience that was really incredible for me. And I took this class, Music and Judaism, and the professor, Dr. Judah Cohen at Indiana University, was incredible. Just a brilliant man. And he was able to teach deeply about Jewish music to an audience that was, I would say, 75% Jewish people, and 25% not Jewish people. And I was just floored by how deep Judaism went. Just like the amount I had to learn to catch up. I don't think I knew how different Judaism was from Christianity before that. I don't think I knew how just rich of a tradition there it was. And so I seriously was considering converting at that point. But I also knew that I was 21 years old and that I didn't want to do something like that on a whim. I wanted to do it in a serious way. I didn't try to do it at that time. But it was always in the back of my head. And many, many years later, when I was in my early 30s, I met my wife, Pryor, who is Jewish. And yeah, I decided to convert. And I have met the most wonderful, radical, queer Jews who are doing interesting things and so much really thriving community. And it has been really exciting to me to be invited to be part of that. Yeah, I've gotten to be on another wonderful podcast that I'm going to shout out, which is my friend Chava's podcast. Hi, how are you?
And I love that podcast.
I've gotten to be on it twice now. And
I have to go find you on there. Can I just say, like, I just want the people listening, if they haven't ever encountered your work before, I just think you're such a compelling artist. Like, everything that I've seen that you do, there's like this combination of this kind of like gritty punk thing, this queerness, and then just like very knowledgeable, like very deep, and then also super silly and funny. Like, it's just all in there together. And I'll say that so Never Played the Messenger in the Dybbuk, a production that Alana and I co-directed that was on Zoom, and then also played Vashti in a Purim spiel that I did. And people, like, when you came on for as Vashti, there were people that had seen the Dybbuk that were like, oh my God, this person, like, you're just like, you really make an impression. People really love your work. And it's just such an honor to have you as part of this project.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Yeah, I've been doing creative things for a long time, and I've been sort of like in and out of different communities at different times, different scenes in different cities. And so it's been wonderful being able to, like, I don't know, the way you've like invited me to be part of like all the wonderful, amazing projects you do. It's just been a delight, because it's something where I was like, oh, I think I could do this. I can plug into this. And that's just felt really exciting, because so much of the time, especially when you're writing, it just feels like you're off doing your own thing in your own little corner, and then like putting it out into the void, and like, who knows if anybody reads it.
I feel like there's this really kind of radical anarchist punk scene in Olympia. Is that, which I associate you with, is that true?
I would say I'm on the margins of it. Okay. I don't think I deeply know it, that many people. I've like, there's definitely like, I know people, and like, I, you know, I work at a local LGBTQ nonprofit. And so I like, I know a lot of people from that, which it is like, you know, a lot of young people, a lot of like cool lefty queers. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess like that's definitely the world that I come from.
Well, and I saw you play Fiona in the like punk Shrek musical. So I was like, obviously you're a star and everybody knows you.
I didn't know almost any of those people before I was in that play.
Oh, wow.
I knew very few of those people. Yeah. Gosh, I think only literally like one or two.
Oh, wow. But wild.
Yeah. I love getting to be able to be plugged in and like experience being part of big collaborative projects like that. It's so fun.
You really rise to the occasion.
Thank you.
But in these last few minutes, I'm wondering if you can share something about the world to come that you are calling in to being.
I'd like to call into being a world to come where we can best learn how to live in harmony with one another, to join together for a greater purpose. I think some of the things that are hardest for me are seeing people whose goals are aligned kind of fall into like discord, and the ways that we struggle as a community in conflict. And when there's people out there who are trying to legislate trans lives out of existence, mm-hmm. you know, and we're here like turned against each other. Mm. And I just, it hurts me. It just feels so, it just weighs really heavy on my heart seeing mm-hmm. that. And I've seen it over and over again in a lot of places. Yeah. And it's hard. It's yeah. really hard. And I don't have an answer, but that's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to call into being in the world to come.
Yeah. May we be united in our love of trans people mm-hmm. and trans futures mm-hmm. and trans possibility mm-hmm. and trans kids. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. More unity in general and specifically around yeah. this.
Yeah. You know, I work with trans kids. I go into the schools every week and run mm-hmm. support groups for queer and trans kids. And mm-hmm. I hear a lot of bleak stuff.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of really heavy stuff. Mm. And just, you know, those kids, they need love and support and community. Mm-hmm. They need so much. They need so much that they're not getting. Mm-hmm. And then they turn on the news and they just, it's just so, it's hard enough when in most of Olympia, everybody is, you know, at least nominatively like pro-trans, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard enough being a trans kid dealing with dysphoria and puberty and, and the ways people, even if they're not specifically like transphobic, are still kind of transphobic, you know? Mm-hmm. It's that stuff is all hard enough. Mm-hmm. Being a teenager alone is already hard enough. But then like you bring in this huge like movement of hate that's like sweeping across our country. It just makes it seem impossible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially to a young person who's looking out and trying to figure out what their future is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
I can spiral on that for a while, but I didn't mean to bring things, mean things too bleak, but that's, you asked me what I would like to bring into the world to come. And that's the things that I feel really strongly yeah. about.
Thank you for sharing what you feel strongly about. I was just feeling into the ways that the kind of inner unity and inner marriage of these different aspects of ourselves, like how much healing that has to offer the world in general. I'm like, yeah. if everybody could understand that we all contain everything, it would be such a better world. You yeah. know, it's like, no, there is no essential anything. No person is just one thing.
Right.
And when we are acting and pretending like we are, then we're causing problems.
Right. We look yeah. at this effort and we're like, there's this many parts of God. And then, and we're made in God's image. Like, mm-hmm. you yes. know, how can we then like try to essentialize what the people around us are?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Thank yeah. you, Never. I so appreciate your time. I know that you have other things to do. You're in the middle of a move. This is so special. Thanks for making this time, and I hope I get to see you soon.
Yeah, I hope I get to see you soon, too. All Thanks right. for inviting me. This was so fun.
Yay, good. All right. I will see you hopefully soon. Happy Shavuot.
Ah, happy Shavuot. Dreaming alive, dreaming alive.
Cottonwood meditation. Take a few deep breaths, allowing your body to relax. And imagine the sweet smell of cottonwood on the breeze, the leaves rustling, sweetness filling your body. Cottonwood is from the genus Populus, which means people's tree. And this tree gives us the gorgeous smell of early, early spring, bottled up with olive oil. We process it in Nisan as one of our gifts and offerings to the holiday of Shavuot, the revelation. Reveling in the goodness of the earth is a revelation for our days, where we're often inside connecting with flat screens. Cottonwood begs us to revel in the human experience, delight, of lusciousness, of healing from pain. Take some breaths in and know that you too, you human being of the earth, the sky, of the soil, the wind, of tears and smiles. Cottonwood is here to remind you of your human needs for delight and pleasure.
And now it is time for the segment that we call This Way to Olam Haba, which is highlighting projects, people, things happening in the world that are kind of pointing the way towards the world to come and what we're wanting to live into and call in. And so this month we want to lift up and celebrate trans youth and
Yes,
the amazing work of coming into their selves in a very intense time to be alive and being such outspoken, fierce, loving people. And so, Rebecca, what are you thinking about around trans youth in this moment?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about how they are ever revealing to us the Torah of this month of revelation, that their lives are such a revelation of what it means to be alive constantly to mm-hmm. me. And with all this like incredibly horrible legislation targeting trans people and targeting trans youth and activists and athletes, that it's a really difficult time to be out and trans. And they are being trans. And I mean, I'm forever inspired by the youth in my life. Like my nephew, who's 12, recently said to me, I just can't believe that people would have hard things happen at their work just because they're trans. And I was like, yeah, that really sucks. And I mean, he's 12. I didn't even know what trans was. I mean, I did in my heart know what trans was, but I didn't know. We didn't have language for that when we were that age.
I loved that you just said that you didn't have language for it, but you knew it in your heart. And it's like, I think I hadn't seen examples of trans people exactly, but growing up in the 80s, you know, the people that we saw on TV.
Boy George. To,
exactly. Boy George, Prince, Annie Lennox, Grace Jones, and like, I'm just thinking of, I don't know, Cyndi Lauper was really huge influence on me. And like, you know, she's cisgender. And also there's something about her gender that is performative, complicated, and really spoke to me as a young person. And I remember, I mean, this is kind of intense, but like in my own like 10-year-old life, coming to a decision about whether I wanted to actually be alive in the world, and that it had to do with having a vision of what my future could be. And literally part of that vision was not knowing whether people were girls or boys, and not even knowing what that meant, you know, only having these glimmers of ideas of what that could be, but knowing that it related to me and how I felt my life and my world. And it makes so much sense that youth would just understand, you know, mm-hmm. people can be lots of ways. And I think that adults are being targeted for having relationships with youth where we get to talk about these kinds of things. Like that's some mm-hmm. of the really intense legislature that's happening, is like the anti-drag stuff, or like some of the laws that are happening in Florida classifying trans people's relationships with youth as being sexual offenders. And it's like, we need each other across these generations.
When I taught sixth grade, I talked to my students a lot about gender and sexuality, because that's like such the age. And at the time I went by Ryan, I was masculine presenting. I wore a tie to work. They called me teacher rather than Mr. or Mrs. And mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of transphobia, even though I didn't identify as trans, I identified as genderqueer. But those were the favorite conversations. But, you know, I was threatened that they were going to file a report against me by a parent, and for teaching students how to moonwalk. That was what they said, because Michael Jackson was a child abuser. But it was like these undercurrents of transphobia with all of that.
Wow.
And we live in a state where there isn't active legislation being pushed through about this. But that the students were always, they were amazing. At one point we were talking about something and they were like, that's sexist, that's homophobic.
I know, the whole thing about don't say gay, and it's like, kids want to talk about this. I remember being 13 and in a choir class where our teacher would let us talk about things like sex. And that's where it first even occurred to me how queer people had sex. It wasn't my teacher being like, let's talk about sex in this gross way. It was like, she was just letting us have a conversation and being like, I'm sure very careful about how much information she gave us, but we were giving each other information mm-hmm. and just holding that space for that conversation. Like that's, I remember that more than most of the things I learned in middle school, you know, like that was a really big deal of a day.
My favorite thing to talk about with kids is gender, and they always want to mm-hmm. talk about it. They always have so mm-hmm. many questions, and they're always mm-hmm. so interested in my partner who's trans. Mm-hmm. They just want to, like, they just like mm-hmm. them more than most yeah. adults, you know. Mm-hmm. They're curious, and it's mm-hmm. not in a weird way. They're yeah. curious. They want to know. And yeah. they understand that there's different ways to exist besides the status mm-hmm. quo. And they see a freedom in the expression, mm-hmm. I think, that they yeah. recognize that they, that is in their soul. That's in all of our yeah. souls. We were talking earlier about my friend, a kid friend in the neighborhood, who the way that we met was, they were walking down the street and I was walking in the other direction. They were with their mom and they were like, hi. And I was like, hi. And they were like, so I used to go by he and now I go by she. And I was like, oh, cool. And they're like, I'm 5 years old. And I'm like, cool. I'm 42 years old at the time. This is a few years ago. And then I was like, I go by they, them. And they're like, okay. And then, you know, of course we become friends, because mm-hmm. I was like, who is this kid? And who is their mom? It was so natural. It's so natural. They're just like so open about it.
So I learned, probably a lot of people that are listening know this, but the term for the generation who comes after Generation Z is Generation Alpha. So like anyone that was born after 2010, I don't know who invents these terms. So, you know, take it or leave it. But I love the idea, you know, the idea that like Generation Z is the last generation. And now we have Generation Alpha, which is like the first generation. And like they are growing up with a sense of climate catastrophe. Like,
yeah,
you know, if they're allowed to know about that, which I know a lot of young people aren't, but, you know, there's a sense of this is the only time, you know, this is it. So there's a level of activism and personal responsibility and truth telling. And it's really amazing. Like, I think I sent you that little video that's like Generation Alpha has entered the chat, and it's just like all these like young queer and trans and non-binary and ally youth being like, this is who we are. Thank the goddess. Thank the goddess for this up and coming generation.
And it's also the generation that's living with the threat of gun violence, and that they have,
yes,
you know,
yes,
at the, in their schools, yeah, they're having like the trauma of having to plan for if this happens. So they're like being traumatized on mm-hmm. multiple, like really deep levels that they have to yeah. live with in their day-to-day life. And that they're still, many of them are still having this response that's just so innate to be themselves. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, I also know kids that are like really struggling, and that they're conforming mm-hmm. in ways that aren't authentic to themselves mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. which is really a reasonable response given all of this mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah.
we want to lift up all the kids for doing the best that they can, given mm-hmm. the trauma that they're living with, mm-hmm. and just send them love and protection. And we see you, we know what you're going through, although we don't, but we want to be with you through it as much as mm-hmm. possible. We care about mm-hmm. you. We love you. And mm-hmm. for those of you who are trans or questioning, we support you being yourself, mm-hmm. and we're going to keep working to create a world where your lives are valued and safe.
And where you have access to gender-affirming healthcare.
Yes.
Which yes. is like, I mean, I think on some level, the way things have transformed since we were young, you know, like there was no gender-affirming healthcare for young people when I was young. I mean, I guess what no. you would call gender-affirming healthcare would be like putting me on the pill when I was 19 because I didn't get a period, or, you know, mm-hmm. like that's, I guess, gender affirming in a way, you know.
Right.
But in terms of actually seeing a person and what their gender is and then helping them make choices to live mm-hmm. the lives that they want to live, it's like, I'm so grateful that that has come into popular consciousness and practice. And then, of course, people who have these fundamentalist ideas, then when they learn about this, it's, you know, then there's going to be a backlash. And I just feel hopeful when I see these young people and their energy and their resistance. It makes me feel like there's nothing that can be done to stop them. It's just like a wave. It's a wave of revelation, and it's happening yeah. no matter what.
Yeah. It's a wave of revelation.
Wave of revelation.
Wave of trans revelation.
Yeah.
That's our Savon podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. And you can still buy the planner on our website, dreamingtheworldtocome.com. And join our Patreon at patreon.com/dreamingtheworldtocome. And thanks to everyone who's rated and reviewed the podcast and the planner. And here's a great review we got of the planner from Catherine H.
Catherine writes, about 10 years ago, my family discovered that we were Mexican through the Sephardic region during the Spanish Inquisition. We were, in fact, Jewish. I have always been fascinated with Judaism and never knew why. Now I have my why and the perfect planner to start my exploration. I never knew where to start, but this planner was a great stepping stone, and I already can't wait to order my next one. Thank you so much, Catherine, and we aww. Can't wait for you to order your next one, too, and I'm sorry that it won't be this next year, and we don't know when it will be, but We're so grateful to be in this journey with you and all of you who are listening. Thank you, and have a really beautiful month of Sivan.
Chodesh Tov.
I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. There was a great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. There was a second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. There were eyeballs on every side of the second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. There were wings upon wings growing out the eyeballs on every side of the second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. Face of a lion, an eagle, a human, a cow, on wings upon wings, growing out the eyeballs on every side of the second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. It was young and old and in between, a lion, an eagle, a human, a cow, on wings upon wings, growing out the eyeballs on every side, second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. I looked up into the sky. I was looking at the center of God's insides, looking for an angel to be my guide. Chills ran up and down my spine. And trumpets were blasting, young and old and in between, a lion, an eagle, a human, a cow, on wings upon wings, growing out the eyeballs on every side of the second ring right there inside of the great big golden ring, and it was twisting and turning. Twisting and turning, twisting and turning, twisting and turning.